Yeah, everything's just peachy in Houston with the Rockets.
And who is the best player in the NBA with no shot at getting the MVP?
Plus, it's the weekly sour rankings, and John puts his target here on Kyrie Irving.
Speaking
it's the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Let's go.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA, the daily podcast covering everything you want to know about the association. On Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales, at Reds Army underscore John on Twitter, and host of the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code Locked On, and you're going to get 20% off your next order. John, I see you're not wearing a sport coat.
I'm not. No, I'm going casual on the sidelines this week, this season. What do you think?
So what? Basically, coaches now get to look like all of the sports reporters that like do this full time and beat reporters.
That's a shame for them because we're not well dressed.
That's like a long running joke. And then when I finally got like a media credential, started going to games, you're like, nope, this is like a real, like, it's like, oh, it's just if people make fun of them for that. No, it's like 100% real for the most part.
Yep. There's a lot of ill fitting wear on the beat. I come with a little bit of swag. I actually do have sport coats that I wear, and I like to bust out some of my sneakers. I got a little bit of a sneaker game. So I'm not going to lump myself into some of the old frumpy dudes that are out there, but I do like to go casual when I'm covering a game.
Look, the coaches get to as well. And you know what? They looked good in the bubble with like the polos and pants and like no jackets. It was fine. I kind of liked it.
Why wear a suit? I don't get it. Why bother?
Everyone's been working from home for the most part for like 9 months. I do the thing where like I put on a polo and then I have basketball shorts and slippers on, like, but you can't see me from there. Like, screw it. I just bought some joggers that I'm looking forward to like really wearing when I want to feel like I'm dressing up now. Like the coaches, they said no track pants, I think, to eliminate that trend. But man, the athleisure thing is nice.
Yeah.
Coaches should be jealous.
I get irrationally excited nowadays. This thing's been going on so long. I get like Gap email saying, oh, joggers are on sale. I'm like, oh, great. More joggers.
Yeah.
I've worn jeans like twice in the past 6 months.
Yeah, I actually, so I tried to keep it going as long as I could. And I went something like 7 months straight without wearing pants. Like I would wear shorts or basketball shorts, obviously, but like nothing longer than that over my legs. I was pretty proud of the like streak.
You know where else pants are optional? Wherever James Harden is partying.
That's a good transition, actually. but I prefer they wear pants at those places that James Harden is partying.
Yeah, me too.
So James Harden, this is a freaking mess. Like, look, we don't need to recap this. You already have all seen it. He did not show up to training camp and to Houston and instead went to Atlanta for a birthday. The birthday might have been at a strip club or not. Then he was at a strip club in Vegas like a day or two later. I don't know. It's tough to kind of piece together. And then he finally showed up. And during all of this, new head coach Steven Silas is trying to talk to the media and is like, this is so not his job. And his job is to just coach players. And, you know, particularly players are there, of which James Harden was not. This sucks for him. But, oh, man, does it create some good drama?
Oh, sure. But you know what? I think he's handling it well. He's standing up there. He's a rookie coach. But you know what he's saying? He's like, this is the case. This is what's happening. He's not pontificating. He's not adding drama to it. He's just saying they're asking a question. And to his credit, he's not dancing. He's not tap dancing around like, oh, well, you know, blah, blah. He's like, James isn't here. It's an unexcused absence.
Yeah.
That's all
you know, why isn't he here? You need to ask him, like, what's going on? I can't tell you. You've got to ask him. I saw this with Alvin Gentry and the Anthony Davis trade request. You know, the front office at the time wouldn't come talk to anyone, so he would just face the media every single day. It'd be question after question about that. He's like, I don't know what you guys want me to tell you. Like, that's not my job. That's above my pay grade here. I just coach our players. That's what I'm doing. Now, Steven Silas is trying to do that. And to his credit, it seems like, you know, the rest of guys are happy. We've seen John Wall, Boogie, and everyone kind of having a good time there. I do wonder, could this undermine him to some degree? But you're right, he is handling it well, where we give him respect, but do the other players give him respect?
You know, I think my approach, and this is just a life approach, you know, if you're up front, if you're just honest with it, this is how it's going. These are my feelings. You want to talk to me? Let's talk. If you don't, fine. But no added BS. No, not like, I think that earns respect. He's not doing anything to James Harden to sell him out. He's just telling the facts. And if the facts are embarrassing, well, who's that on? That's not on, it's not on Silas. That's on James Harden. And I do think that also he is a little bit empowered by the fact that we all know that James Harden is leaving. So he's not going to be there for the long term. So Silas can ramp up a little bit of a, you know, I don't want to say standoffish, but like he can take this stand, because it doesn't matter if he pisses off James Harden, as long as the guys in the locker room, if he knows that, if the guys in the locker room know that he's standing up for them, then that's what matters.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, I don't know. I look at a rookie coach coming in, when you're trying to get buy-in from the rest of the squad, the rest of the roster, and you have your best player kind of doing this openly defiant thing, which it's kind of extenuating circumstances. It's not a dude who's going to be there long-term just being like, you know what? I'm tired. I don't want to go through training camp. This is like a partial, a trade demand. And it sounds like Harden might have demanded one last year too. If they didn't improve the team around him, then they try. And then he's like, oh, you know what? It's not good enough. So sorry, I want out again. Man, the whole thing, though, is just a mess.
Yeah, but, you know, the more stuff that comes out, the more that Harden tries to exert some pressure, the worse Harden looks.
It's making him look bad.
It's, you know, if he simply, and I know that he just got back to Houston, and he's going through the coronavirus protocol and all of that. We'll see what happens with him being out there without a mask on. But the proper, I think, most conducive route to getting what he wants is going back to Houston, playing nice, making it clear, I don't want to stay here, but I'm going to go out there and do my job. Show that, you know, a little bit of pride in your job. Show that the one thing that people shouldn't be concerned about is something that you aren't doing, instead of going out and doing it, partying all the time. You're just playing into the James Harden stereotype. Go to Houston, do your job, do it well. But behind the scenes, you can work with the front office to go to a place that you want to go, because you have zero leverage, none, zero. So by trying to force your way out like this, and by it, you just look like you're throwing a temper tantrum.
So, if we're doing the morally right thing, what you're saying is correct, but I actually disagree with you, because
how dare you?
Yeah, I know, right? And finally, we disagree on something. I think if he wants out, he needs to make this worse, like way worse. And that sucks. And I'll explain why that really sucks in a second. But when you look at the teams that would, you know, just trade offers for him, he commands significantly more than what Jrue Holiday was traded for, I'd say. And, you know, they want a mix of young potential all-star player plus a bounty of picks and other young guys that were probably just first round picks. So they equal first round picks. And no one really has a package that they could put together unless it's New Orleans or Oklahoma City, and neither team is going to trade for him to do this. So he's got to do everything he can to lower his trade value, to not let the Houston Rockets have the kind of leverage that they have. And they do, because he has 2 years left. This year and one more year. He's got to at least wait like 6 months before it starts to tilt in his favor. And even then, it doesn't till you have 1 year remaining on your contract and that's it. So if he wants out now, he should be openly doing everything possibly that would piss people off to lower his trade value, because he's just worth too much and no teams have it. So he's got to, in a weird way, try and lower his trade value if he wants out of there. Otherwise, no trade materializes, in my opinion.
Okay, I can see that. I can see what you're saying. Like, you've got to drive it down to a point where other teams can afford to trade for you.
Yeah, that's it. That's summed up better. You know, thanks for making my point quicker than I did, but like better. Well, yeah, that's it.
Well, okay. I mean, I can see that. I can't say that that's not legit.
No, like you shouldn't do that. Like that's awful.
But right. But here's what I wonder. And when you hear, like I listened to the Zach Lowe, podcast, last night, and they were talking about the breach of contract stuff. That is something that has been kind of bandied about, and not from the Rockets, but from other teams who are afraid that their stars are going to see this as the blueprint. And yeah. Now your point is valid, but the NBA cannot, this is almost like the player empowerment version of Sam Hinkie. Where
yeah, that's NBA, fair. That's a good. I like that. I love that analogy.
Thank you. I just came up with that.
That was the NBA really good.
Cannot really good. Afford to have players
no.
being this openly brazen about their desire to be moved, because who gets hurt here? The fans do. The fans who are paying the money.
That's who's catching strays here, man. Like. This is not a. I dislike Tillman Fertitta, even though I've never met him, just based on everything around
I'm
him.
I'm with
I
you.
I seem to like this dude. You think he cares? No. I don't have to pay $40 million to James Harden and I can still be right. maybe competitive. He's thrilled about this. Dude just got $30 million from the NBA for hardships from like not having fans. The only person or the only people that are actively hurt by this, because Harden clearly does not care about his reputation. In one way or another, he's going to get the majority of what he wants, right? Which is a trade out of Houston into a contender. It's going to happen at some point.
Sure.
The only people that are getting hurt by all of this are the fans that have to deal with this with a team they root for and a player they've loved. And this is kind of the repayment for them. And it sucks. And this is where it sucks being a fan of a team, of a player, when stuff like this happens. I am as pro, player empowerment and movement, I think, that you can possibly get. This is hitting a point where it's like, okay, maybe we're crossing a line here that like, I don't like this, which, you know, for me and you and I have talked about how pro we are, you know, players moving around and taking charge of their careers. This got to be pretty egregious if it's getting to that point, I think.
Yeah. And this really opens up the Pandora's box is, well, continues to hold it open, I should say, because yeah. now you're getting into the, well, what do contracts mean anymore? Because it used to be that you force your way out in the last year of your deal and you say, I'm not going to resign. Now you're forcing your way out with two more years left on your deal. It's not even, you just signed the extension. You've got this year, next year, and the year after. And now you're going to, so what's the point of a contract? And this is why NBA teams are going to push the league to do something. And it's going to set up this interesting dynamic between the league and the players union, where they're going to have to get together and say,
there's just not much they can do, right? Like they fined Anthony Davis for leaking that trade request. And when you broke it down to like a normal person's money, it was like $50 to him. And so sure. like, if you don't, unless you're doing massive multiple $1 million fines for this sort of conduct, I don't know if it's going to happen. Like, I just don't know what they can do about it. They, you know, they've got to try and find some way. I agree with that. It's just one of those things. These players realize there's very little consequences to some of this if you just don't care about your reputation.
Right. The only consequence, and this is absolutely never going to happen, but you just wish that some team had the sack to do it, is find him in breach of contract, negate the contract, dump it, and say, fine, your contract is null and void. Now, sure, James Harden go to every team he wants, but he's due $41 million this year, $44 million next year, and a $47 million player option. There is no team out there that can pay him anywhere near that.
I was going to say, like, oh, he'll just get a contract for that amount, but you're right.
It's impossible.
When you do it, there's no cap space, right? Like, there's so little cap space to begin
with. Who's he going to sign with? None of the good teams have cap space. The Nets don't have any cap space. They'd have to sign him for, I don't know, I don't even know what exceptions they have, but like the veteran minimum. I mean, that's all they have left. Next year, what do they have?
Somehow gets a full non-taxpayer mid-level, so like 9.2, whatever it is, on a 1-year deal. it's still a lot of money, but a significant reduction, and carries with it a lot of risk. Yeah, that's the move. That's maybe a way.
That's the move.
Yeah,
that's the move. It's the hammer. No team will do it, but that's the hammer. That's the, you want to play this? You've done enough where we can void your contract. Boom.
I don't know if you'll see a court that would, it'd go to court. And I don't know if you'd find like a judge that would be like, yes, this is pretty, we've seen some pretty egregious things in the NBA, and do they even do that with Gilbert Arenas? Did they do it with Crittenden and that whole incident in the Wizards? And I don't think so. And like, that's as close of one as you could probably get, but it's interesting.
Right.
But at fighting it in almost setting that precedent. And if you get lucky and they do, like, yeah, that's a very good point, because then that will stop that the rest of the way. Interesting. I like the move. So speaking of James Harden, he may or may not come up next in the discussion we're about to have, which came from Locked On Pacers, which was a great question that our social media accounts from Locked On NBA has posed. And that is simply, who's the best player who has no chance to win the MVP award? We're going to break it down for you coming up here in the next segment of Locked On NBA. But first, today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. John, I just reordered. I picked up the cookies and cream, the lemon cheesecake, and the caramel brownie flavor. And I am excited. Like, I'm genuinely excited for protein bars to come in the mail.
I know, it's because they're like candy bars, but I'm sticking with my peanut butter ones. I still have one box and a few more left. So far so good for me. I want to branch out, cause I know they're all going to be delicious, but I found mine and I'm sticking with it because it's, I love that combination of peanut butter and chocolate, and it's much healthier than, cramming Reese's peanut butter cups down my throat.
Just a little bit. Look, these things are great for someone who's just trying to be a little bit more health conscious, whether you're looking to lose or maintain weight. These bars are low calorie, low sugar, high in protein, high in fiber. Some have 19 grams of protein, it's a lot, and 180 calories, or 17 grams of protein, still a lot, and just 130 calories. So you're not wasting all the cardio you just did at the gym. And these things taste better than any other bar out there on the market. They're covered in 100% real chocolate, soft, easy to chew. You're not like chugging down a bottle of water after you eat one of these because it's chalky, it like dried your mouth out or anything like that. So if you want to try Built Bars, go to builtbar.com, use promo code Locked On, and you're going to get 20% off your next order. That is promo code Locked On for 20% off at builtbar.com. Don't forget, subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcast. There's basically always breaking news or drama happening at some point. And you know what? We got a daily show right here that you're listening to that breaks down everything you want to know. What's the latest drama mean in the NBA? What's the importance of the Woj bomb that happened at midnight last night? We cover it all and more here on Locked On NBA. So make sure you subscribe and listen daily. All right, John. So our friends over at Locked On Pacers, Tony East, posted the question of who's the best player who has no chance to win MVP. And a couple of names jumped to my mind. And one of them at one point was Steph Curry, because I don't think he's going to end up winning or really have a chance. But this question can get too in the weeds, so we're going to make this a little bit easier. I'm going to go to a sports book. We're going to look at the odds here, and we're going to basically take out the top 10 guys. So looking at the odds right now, Luka Doncic, number one, Giannis, two, Steph Curry, LeBron James, James Harden, Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, and then Nikola Jokic. We're ruling them out. You're not allowed to pick those guys. The next couple of guys on the board in terms of odds: Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Kyrie Irving, Russell Westbrook, Devin Booker, Paul George, Ben Simmons, Bradley Beal, Kyle Lowry, Zion Williamson. We can probably stop there. So of those kind of like guys who, like, yeah, they're not going to win the MVP award. And let's go by the odds here. Who's the best player out of that group?
I'm going to say Bradley Beal is going to be the group because, okay, if we're saying like outside the top 10, there, I still think those people outside the top 10, there are a lot of those guys still have a chance. So
yeah,
like I think Jason Tatum has, obviously I'm going to go with the Celtics guy. Jason Tatum has a chance to become an MVP candidate because Kemba Walker is hurt, because Gordon Hayward left. He's going to be the focal point of the offense, I think, and he's a good two-way player. I think he's going to have a ton of opportunity. And if he can raise the Celtics up into, competition for the second seed, then you're starting to look at him as maybe, I don't know if he's going to win it. So I guess maybe this is what we're talking about, but I can see him as a two two or three. When I say no chance to win an MVP, I'm saying this person might not even make the top five.
Okay, that's good too. It's a subjective question.
Right. So, I think everybody in the top four is a legitimate MVP candidate. Mm-hmm. So there's a group beyond the 10 that can legitimately be in there. I think that fifth, we always hand that fifth one to a ceremonial.
Oh, yeah, like the token vote.
Right. The Isaiah Thomas vote. So, mm-hmm. but I think Bradley Beal is, I think, the best player. Just by framing this question, it's almost as tough to kind of hash out as what does the MVP mean, but
yeah, so that's why I tried to put some criteria on it, because like I said, it's subjective. Like, what does it mean to you? Who's considered, you know, having no shot versus a shot? I'm totally with you. Take it however you want. I'm listening.
Yeah. So, I mean, look at his history already. He's already been snubbed for all NBA when he had a strong case. He's the type of guy, the Wizards could be an interesting team, getting Westbrook, having some shooting. They could be a nice spread offense. They could make some noise. So maybe they'd be a playoff team, but I don't think the Wizards are good enough. I think that Westbrook, if he can play and stay healthy, will take some of that shine away. You're like, oh, is it Bradley Beal? Is it Westbrook? And I think Brad Beal is kind of like just perpetually underrated because he's on the Wizards and because they haven't been good. So I think Bradley Beal can put up a season that will be statistically comparable to a lot of these guys who are MVP candidates, but Beal won't get into that top five.
I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. So I took a somewhat similar approach to the way you talked about Bradley Beal and John Wall. And when I was looking at this, of guys who probably have no shot, I kind of landed on Kyrie Irving to a degree, I think, here, of like the best player that probably has no chance to win. Because frankly, if that Nets team is really good, it's going to be Kevin Durant, I think, who's getting the MVP consideration, sure, and not Kyrie Irving, which doesn't mean he wouldn't be worthy of being in the conversation as that third, fourth, fifth guy. But because you've got Durant there, I wonder if he would get the same degree of consideration, and probably kind of gets left off from that. And I thought that's interesting, but it's, you need a situation like that to maybe overshadow it. Also, like, you make a good point, though. You know, Jimmy Butler at plus 2,000 to win. The Heat are really good, and they're a top two seed in the East. Like, yeah, he's probably going to be in the running for MVP and has kind of crept up the boards based on just the fortunes of his team to a degree. But I landed on Kyrie Irving because of that Kevin Durant factor. But if we're going for someone who has, like, no chance, you know, it could be a guy like Brandon Ingram here in New Orleans, who won Most Improved last year. If this team does get into the playoffs, it's largely going to be due to him, not as much Zion Williamson. And I wonder if he'd be a good pick for this sort of thing too.
Yeah. I mean, that's fits my criteria. I think that's the type of guy who's on a team that can be really, really good, but won't get the full shine, that will get like a mention in passing because of maybe somebody else who's on his team. There are other reasons involved, but like with Zion, like Zion's gravity is just too great. Everybody flocks to Zion. It doesn't matter. It's almost like The Good Place. You watch The Good Place?
No, I don't, but now I'm ready to hear this.
Well, it's the two sisters, and the one sister that can never do no wrong, Camilla, who she, no matter what happens to Tahani, like, can be around Camilla, and Camilla gets all the shine. Like, that, if you don't get the reference, I just
falls. No, this people just sounds like my brother and I with like my parents, even though I'm not you know I'm the better son. Oh, wow. Who's doing a lot with his life.
so your brother's the one that gets the overlook. But yeah, so that's the type of thing that I'm looking at. Like, for the people who watch The Good Place, it's the Tahanis of the world of the NBA that I'm looking at here. So Ingram definitely falls into that category.
Yeah, I think you could maybe throw like Siakam in there to some degree. I wonder if like Chris Paul would be an interesting one too, depending, because he's probably going to be overshadowed by Devin Booker, but he's going to be so, this comes to your measure of value, right? most valuable. Yeah. And so that's where Chris Paul will get votes.
See, I think that is the reverse, that Devin Booker is going to be the guy that does a ton of the work, but because Chris Paul's on his team, and if the Suns get playoff contention, people will flock to Booker, but then Chris Paul is going to get a lot of the attention. It's like, wow, Chris Paul went to OKC. Look at what he did. Then he went to Phoenix. Look at what he did. And then Booker's going to be the guy that's going to be like, yo, hello, I'm the one that's averaging 30 points a game.
That's why I think it overshadows Chris Paul. Like if Booker has a 50, 60 point game, like, okay, they're going to point to that and be like, cool, there's this kind of crowning achievement, that like jewel on top of everything that you want in that sort of award, that big statement game that Paul's probably not going to have. But yeah, I mean, NBA nerds and all of us are going to kind of go for Chris Paul because we know what he does and what he provides. So it probably kind of helps him in that sort of thing. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting question. We threw it out there on social media. If you don't follow, it's at Locked On NBA Pods. Make sure you follow it on Twitter because they've been killing it in the social media game recently. And also trying to figure out who the best starting five would be of Locked On hosts as players, which you were in that starting five.
Yeah. Hey, look, man, I'm out there. I'm ready to ball, even though I'm old and it takes me 3 hours to warm up. I'm out there, baby.
I would probably not even be on the bench.
I mean, look, in reality, like in my head, I'm still good at basketball. When I'm actually out there, it's like, I have not yet accepted my age. So I'm still trying to play like I'm in my 20s, and I'm very much not in my 20s. I've got to learn the old man game. I got to learn these fadeaways. I got to learn these.
Oh, you got to get a little Dirk?
I got to go. Yeah, man. I got to get. Yes, exactly. I got to get the Dirk one-legged fadeaways, the old Paul Pierce game, something like that. But yeah, I'll still get out there, though.
There you go. All right. So everyone go check out at Locked On NBA Pods. Let us know who you think the best player who has no chance to win the MVP is. Make sure you follow it because they're putting some great stuff up there. So coming up to wrap up the show, the sour rankings, and John has a specific one in mind. So that's coming here next on Locked On NBA. The wait is almost over. The 2020-2021 NBA season is almost here, and the Locked On NBA podcast right here will get you ready with a special week of shows beginning next week, December 14th. Get previews of every team, division by division, from all 30 of our Locked On experts, including us, plus waiver wire additions from Locked On Fantasy Basketball, rookies to watch from the GOAT Chad Ford, and predictions on each division from Rejecting the Screen. Subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcasts. All right, weekly sour rankings. We've had gripes these past couple of weeks, like a bunch of old dudes yelling at
grievances
here. Grievances. It's the holiday season for that anyway. You've got a specific one you really wanted to touch on today.
Well, okay, so it all comes from the Kyrie Irving decision to not talk to the media, which the problem that I have with this is that he is punishing the wrong guys. And this is how it goes. Today, Tuesday on ESPN, Stephen A. Smith laces into Kyrie. And Kyrie becomes this discussion. And then the clip gets shared all over social media. There's no doubt that Kyrie sees this. All the players see what Stephen A. Smith does. So what does Kyrie Irving do? He decides that he's not going to talk to the beat writers who are there, who are just there on a regular daily basis to do their job. And for him to take the anger that he has against like the big talking heads or what people are tweeting and to take it on the beat writers is ridiculous. And the biggest peeve that I have here is I don't think NBA players know what quote unquote the media is. I don't think that they understand what the media is. They use this ubiquitous term to lash out against the media, but I would never, ever, ever get away with going to Kyrie and saying, well, basketball players act this way and prefacing my question that way. So I have a big gripe with players not taking the time to understand the difference between what people are tweeting, what a Twitter account that says NBA blah, 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 and just steals other people's stuff and puts it out there and gets a bunch of retweets. What the difference is between that, but between Stephen A. Smith putting on a performance, which he is, on a debate show, and what people like me on the Daily Beat who are just asking questions, basketball questions that we're trying to get answers to, and trying to write just regular stories every day. I got 2-3 things to write every day.
And a lot of them are fact-based. And I think that's something that has kind of gotten lost in this to some degree, that a lot of the beat writers, it's just a job that they're doing. They're not going through the motions of it as much, but there's kind of a formula to it to some degree of, this is the story I'm going to write, this is how you kind of report on the story, and this is what you do. And then you do get a lot of media that's come up maybe non-traditionally, which is in the arena here, but kind of separate from the people who actually rely on those quotes from Kyrie Irving and being able to ask Kyrie Irving question, fan blogs, you know, different things like that, which are part of this discourse and discussion, and right, don't need the same kind of access and don't rely so much on being able to ask Kyrie Irving a question, that it's very different for the beat writers who dramatically like or desperately need to do this sort of thing.
Right. And that's, and look, I'm not trying to pile on to Kyrie. Like, I think a lot of times Kyrie is misunderstood. I think people really do have a tendency to take out little chunks of Kyrie, what he said, and because out of context, those things sound salacious. I understand that. I'm not saying Kyrie Irving doesn't have a point with what he's saying. And I think there is some discussion to be had about media accountability and where that's coming from, and guys who can say, well, hey, look, I don't have access. I can sit here and say whatever I want because I don't have access. I don't have to answer to these guys. I'm just going to give my opinion. That is the opposite of what the people who are there around him do. When I write something, and I know this is different in COVID times, but when I write something and I put an opinion out there, or if I say something on my podcast, I walk into that locker room every day. And if Jaylen Brown decides that he doesn't like what I had to write, he can come up to me and look me in the eye and be like, what did you mean by that? And you know what? Frankly, I invite that because that's part of the checks and balances of it all. So these people who can stand off to the side and yell and, blah, 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 and whatever and call Kyrie names, well, Kyrie should have an issue with them. But what I really want, and I it's not even a Kyrie-centric thing, because I think it applies to many, if not most, NBA players, is take a little bit of time to understand who the people are around you, what they do for a living, what the people on TV do for a living, what the people on radio do for a living, because we take the time to look into what you do for a living. And so I think it's just a matter of respect. We're part of the ecosystem. We're not trying to be gotcha. We're trying to tell good stories. And if you've got a problem with something that we're trying to do or something that we've done, you can talk to us because our faces are right there in front of you all the time. But don't take out your anger on Stephen A. Smith or some blogger or some Twitter account on the people on a daily basis that are just trying to do good stories because you do not understand what the media is.
That's fair. I got no issue with that as the sour rankings this week. Like, no, I get it. It's weird. Also, like, you know, if you want to make sure you are, people are understanding what you're trying to say or clearing anything up, you probably need to do it by speaking, because the more you don't do that, the more we're just going to try and infer and read between the lines.
Right. Whatever
other people will, like, it's leaving it more up to interpretation. That is not a good way to kind of go about it. You know, it's now with the Zoom availabilities and so many more people are on them. There have been more people on the ones for the Pelicans than we would ever have at practice.
A ton more, yes.
Your message cannot get missed. And exactly what you are trying to say and to clarify cannot get missed. And you have these opportunities to really engage and interact with a whole lot of people that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. So in some sense, this is never a better time. It's never been a better time to talk to the media about some of this stuff.
Right. And look, I'm not saying this because I think Kyrie owes me anything or owes my counterparts in Brooklyn anything. But I will also add to that, this is part of his job. It is required.
Yeah, I don't know how the NBA is going to let him get away with this.
This is like, I hate to say it, but players are by rule required to talk to the media. That's part of the deal. So I'm sorry that he doesn't like talking to people. And again, I'm willing to have the discussion about which media members need to be held accountable. But I do think that players need to know what the difference is between all of these different media outlets. And they are required by rule to talk. So at some point, he's going to have to say something. And I just think just a little openness and say, hey, look, this is what I'm saying. This is why I think this. I think people take my stuff and mix it up and just put it out there and have a conversation. Think the openness. It's like I said at the beginning of the podcast. The openness, the honesty, that is much better than standing back and hiding behind a statement because, like you said, it just leaves too much for interpretation. It's better to talk and explain yourself than put that stuff out there because people are just going to chop it up and do it more than they did before.
That's why you and I talk a whole lot on this show so that no people misinterpret it, which also probably means we need to wrap up here and not go too long. So that's going to, there you go. Pros at this sort of stuff. That's going to do it for the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Thank you all very much for listening. Go check out Built Bar at builtbar.com. You'll get 20% off your next order. Don't forget next week, the preview for all teams, all divisions, everything about the league coming up all next week here on the Locked On NBA podcast. And on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales at Reds_Army_John on Twitter, and I host the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with you all in 2 weeks.